Wormhorn. DK shoots, scores! DK wins it for an end round!
What is going on, guys? Welcome back to the Lions Blog Podcast. This is your host, Gavin, here to talk about the 1-0 loss against Philadelphia Union at home, as well as look ahead to a massive, massive matchup on Wednesday against the New York Red Bulls Open Cup semifinal. Second time in a row in the tournament, at least, that, you know, there's been a couple seasons in between, but we've been to the semifinals two times in a row now, so we will definitely be previewing that matchup. Here to do it with me is Daniel. Daniel, how are you doing tonight?
Pretty good. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. I had a fantastic weekend getting to see my Arsenal absolutely batter Chelsea 4-0, and just had the time of my life. Other than that, though, it's been a long day, really busy day. Actually, this is something you will enjoy, Mr. Real Estate Agent. We just got a screen put up at the house.
Very nice.
So that whole entire, by the way, Daniel was my real estate agent, so he knows this house decently well. So on the back, there's like a big slab of concrete. And then to the left, if you look left, you were, and that was open. Mm-hmm. And then there was the there was like an outside little roof, and it was open. It was just a porch. And what we did is we put a roof over the entire slab of concrete, and then we screened the entire back porch area in. And so now it's just like we basically extended out like living space. It's almost like a Florida room. It's awesome. Absolutely love
really
it.
That's really cool. I'd like to see some pictures, but one thing we should also remember is that that was where that Indian burial ground was as well.
Yes, and that's why it was so cheap.
Well, that's why you've got the porch there. Like, you can pretend now that you've got a nice tranquil place and that nothing bad ever happened there.
Yeah, definitely. So, well, I'll have to have you come over to watch some games soon, because we've got a TV out there. We got the whole shebang, and cook some dinner. It'll be fun. But that kind of tells you where we're at with Orlando City, that's kind of what the talk that we're enjoying right now. Adam will be joining us later. He is still on his way home from work. But unfortunately, Daniel, we do have to talk about the match that happened 1-0 against Philadelphia. First and foremost, I will be honest, I did not watch the match. I haven't had time between the end of Saturday and this moment that we are talking right now, 10:23 p.m. on a Monday night, to sit down and watch the soccer match. So, Daniel, you did see most of the match. What were your high-level thoughts on the game?
High-level thoughts are that, okay, well, the referees do suck, okay, and it's not the priority thought in this, but it is a thought because they do suck. We'll talk about the obvious elephant in the room when we get to the end of it. But also, Philadelphia, they're going to be, I feel, worthy, Eastern champions, probably. And they've got a funny sort of knack about them, like New England did last year, where they just seem to find a way to win games. And whether you like that or not, there's two ways to look at that. The first is that if you're a good team, you've got to be able to do it regularly. And if you're aspiring to be a good team, then you need to learn to beat teams that can do that. And that's kind of where Orlando City come into the conversation. They got 100 minutes to play. They got 100 minutes of open play and barely tested the goalkeeper, had a couple chances. We all know the Torres one was a real, Messi should have scored. Tuchel's header at the end arguably could have been better as well. And, of course, we have the penalty call, which Pro made an absolute bollocks of and should have given the penalty. I've seen that type of confrontation nearly every weekend. You see it in one game or another, in one league or another, and it's a penalty. But likewise, so was Philly's goal. So that was also the legitimate VAR goal. So I think on balance, the result was fair to Philadelphia. Orlando just looked impotent. Very good at getting forward, but just like you know, even then when they were trying to pass through the midfield, they just did not look cohesive and a bit sloppy. And, you know, I had to question, did they really need the friendly through the middle of the week? You know, it's another debate in itself. They just
Let's have it. I think that's an interesting conversation.
I'll be honest, like, look, I'm fortunate, right? I've been able to see, you know, the Premier League and such and the teams that are in it, you know, Arsenal and such and whatever. I've been fortunate enough to see them in my lifetime, you know, and I'm fully cognizant of the difficulty there is in trying to get over to England to watch a game. So I've seen a lot of people talk about those games this week. And for one hand, I'm happy that Arsenal came to town, because not only did Arsenal come to town, but they brought most of the best players, you know. They put out a good team, and they respected the game, and they respected the fact there was going to be a lot of people there.
We brought our full squad. We brought like one kid and a bunch of goalkeepers.
I noticed
but that. It was our entire squad. Even the players we're trying to sell.
You've got to give fair play to Arsenal and Arteta for doing that, because they respect the fact they've got a fan base here, and that, you know, those fans showed up for that. And, you know, it's good that Orlando was able to give them a game, but you've got to question the wisdom of playing the game between two other games, you know, a few days apart, and also, you know, pretty much going full pelt at it. You know, they were trying to win the game. And, you know, it was a good showing. You know, the shackles were off a little bit. I dare say that they attacked better against Arsenal than they've attacked better in the last 2 to 3 months of this season in the league. I mean, they looked like they wanted to win that game and play that game. And then you see the Philadelphia game, and it was like watching a turd's like slow dripping down a wall after somebody threw it at it. And I'm just like, I'm so frustrated watching it, because the one moment of quality they did have, it didn't even come from, you know, a great build-up play. It came from quick transition, which was, you know, Mauricio's passing the midfield. You know, the ball eventually finds its way through to Torres, who gets 10 yards from goal and somehow doesn't even hit the target. And, like, you're just wondering, like, what on earth is going on? Like, for one, it's frustrating that that's the only chance you can actually remember. And second, how the hell does he miss it, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know what to say. Like, it's six home losses now this season. And
pathetic.
I think it's six home losses. And, you know, your game plan is basically score against Orlando. And if you do, you're probably going to win.
Oh, yeah, definitely. You can just kind of sit deep.
Yeah, I mean, it's, I don't know. I don't know what to make of it. They just lack fluency. And I saw one really good take, actually, and I'm trying to think, if I can't remember it word for word, but I saw it on Twitter today. And it was just about, basically, you know, with the roster, like, a lot of people will always talk about, oh, he doesn't have his own guys yet and this and that. Well, these are his own guys, and you wouldn't know, because half the time they don't look like they've played with each other, especially in attack. And it's a concern, for sure.
So there's a lot to unpack there, definitely. So let's start with the debate that we said we were going to have about the games midweek.
Yeah,
I think, look, a friendly like that, some of it is down to money, no doubt, right? Arsenal are here, you get people in, it's a good marketing opportunity for your stadium, get people who don't watch Orlando City play, usually, that live in Orlando, they can come watch an Orlando City game, and, you know, you want to put on a decent display. You don't want to get smashed 6-0 like our neighbors down the road, and then, you know, think about it this way, if I'm a neutral, and I live in Orlando, and, you know, it's cool to watch Arsenal play, and then they come to town and smash us 7-0. What's the incentive to come back to an Orlando City game? There really isn't one. So I think it's fair that we put out a strong lineup. I think we could have rotated a bit quicker and certain players quicker. Like Facundo Torres, did he have to play that long? I'm glad Pereira didn't play at all. Did Araujo have to play that long? I think that's where, because at the end of the day, look, players can play a 55, 60 minutes on a Wednesday and be fine for a Saturday home game. You know, we're about to play three home games in a row. I'm not too concerned about the players going into this Wednesday night. I mean, I'm concerned about our tactics and our form, but I'm not concerned about our fitness. When playing a Wednesday, Saturday, Wednesday, all at home, and their players were playing 65, 70 minutes, and there was a whole line change, basically. I'm not too concerned about that. But could they have come off a little bit earlier? Yes. So that's kind of my take on it. Maybe if it wasn't Arsenal, my first love, maybe I would have a different take. I don't think so, though. Marketing. And you know what? It was just a fun time overall, even with the rain delay that happened. What else did you say in there? There was a lot to unpack, and it was a lot of good points.
Mostly,
what else did you say? What was next?
My grievances were just more towards the approach of towards the game. That was, it's, you know, like about a team that's good, you know, like Philadelphia, will be able to adapt and, you know, and shit out a victory, but we'll also be able to turn on the style, which we've seen them do as well, and be a team at home. And if you're aspiring to be a good team, you need to be able to beat teams that can do that. And
yeah.
That gets lost in all of these discussions that I read about and I hear about. You know, no one seems to be willing to take the responsibility that Orlando needs to get good. All right? And people who play Demon's Souls games will understand what I mean by that. You need to get good. You're going to get your ass beaten until you get good. Okay? You're talking to an Elden Lord here who has managed to beat Elden Ring after 200 hours. I know what getting good is. And getting good is not good, pissing about... And listen, getting good is not passing about with the ball in your own half on 99 minutes chasing an equaliser.
Yeah.
Okay? It's not. It's a very frustrating, I don't know, like...
Yeah, it's just it's frustrating know, Gavin, what, point in the season.
I have one of those, like, is it GIF or GIF? Am I saying it right? I don't know.
GIF.
A GIF. I'm going to call it a GIF. I don't care what, you know, what people say and call it GIF. It's not lemon. Anyway, a GIF, right? There's a GIF of someone just picking up the computer and throwing it into the cubicle next to them. That's how I feel when I talk about Orlando City, okay?
Yeah, it's just frustrating. The other good thing that you said that I wanted to touch on was these aren't Pareja's players.
I've seen that banded around.
I can't believe that people are saying that. He's been here 4 years, what, 3 years now? That's a bit, three seasons. It's a bit ridiculous to say that. I don't know how the board and or Oscar Pereja operate, but there seems to be a pretty close connection between Luis Muzy and Oscar Pereja. So they know a little bit about each other and they've worked together a long time. And Muzy knows what players Oscar likes and Oscar knows what kind of players Muzy likes. And so I'm sure there are times where it's like, Rico and Muzy decide that they're going to get a player, and Oscar may have been like, well, I would rather have somebody else. But they're like, no, this fits what we want to do. This fits the price range. He actually wants to come here because, I mean, at the end of the day, there are players that we target, that we try to get, that don't want to come to MLS. There was that, there's that famous quote from Domé Torrent, and he was like, he was mad because NYCFC had to get the eighth or ninth player on their list. They had to go all the way down in their list. You know, these teams make like 15, 20 player long lists. And he's like, we're trying player after player on this list and we have to go with number 9 or number 10. Like, we can't even get like our top 5 target. And, that's just kind of the nature of the league right now in terms of finances, in terms of, you know, playing in America and the stature that we have in the game and all that. So all of that to say, Oscar may not have his exact number one targets at all times, but like These are still players brought in that he okayed. I think it would be a ridiculous statement to say that he doesn't have his players. Finishing that off, Adam has just joined. Adam, welcome to the shit show.
Is that what happens when I'm gone for 20 minutes?
Yeah, we missed you. Like, you know, you're really good at sandwiches, Adam, but this was a shit sandwich because you didn't show up. Okay.
Hey, it can't be any worse than the British food I tried to make.
Hey, your bread pudding was pretty good.
Actually, it was.
Listen, one of these days, I'm going to come to your food truck with like four like massive shepherd's pies, and I'm going to sell them. And you'll change your opinion on British food, at least for a few hours.
I don't hate shepherd's pie. Here's my opinion on British food. That I think we can settle this. Mm-hmm. They got like three or four bangers. And one of them is bangers and mash, but like three or four, like absolute bangers, you know, fish and chips. Like I see the appeal. I'll call that a banger. I don't personally like fish, but I see the appeal. Bangers and mash, shepherd's pie, like some of the desserts, you know, you got the tier. I'll call them tier two because, you know, other cultures have tier ones. Britain doesn't have any tier ones, but they got some tier twos.
Oh my goodness.
And then you drop down to like tier six after that.
That's funny. So you're
beans
basically
on toast
saying,
is not it.
Beans on toast is not the thing. It's not the play.
So you're basically saying America's the Tom Bogart of food, right? And
yes.
What would that make England? The Stan Collymore of food.
Taylor Twelman.
Oh, for fuck's sake. God. Well, the only good thing is that, you know, we would match his anger. I'll give you that. We'll match his passion and his anger.
Oh, my God.
Absolutely. What are we doing? That is the most righteous indignance I've ever seen anyone show on national television, and it was deserved.
It was good. I don't like him, but I think he did pretty good with that.
It was an important quote. All right, I'm gonna reel us back in here. Right. Adam, I know you didn't. We haven't even really touched on the moments of the game at all because we were having some interesting conversations about the Arsenal Orlando City match, how we approached it. Was it the right idea to have that match at all? Sandwiched at such an important time in our schedule, we obviously didn't know about the Open Cup. And then overall, I guess there's been some takes that Daniel has seen. Orlando's apparently people are saying Oscar Pereja doesn't have his full roster. Like this isn't his full roster and these aren't all of his players. So he needs more time.
It's been 3 years. How long does it take to get your roster? 3 years?
Mm-hmm. Forever.
Apparently until he wins a championship, he doesn't have his guys yet. Clearly.
Yeah.
That's right.
Good answer. Anything else on like the Arsenal match?
On Wednesday, in my opinion, it was okay. It's not great to schedule a friendly in the middle of your season when it is getting to be like, even without Open Cup, like the schedule for this month was already super congested, and then you add Open Cup into it, and like you know, you still want they had to know the potential scheduled dates of Open Cup. They had to know, okay, we're taking this competition seriously. We want to still be in it. They had to know that.
Yes.
It's the only way that it makes sense from a soccer perspective, right? Because it doesn't. It flat out doesn't. It does from a business perspective, but from a soccer perspective, flat out does not make sense to schedule that match. I don't care how famous Arsenal is. The only way to make it make soccer sense is to leverage how famous Arsenal is and put on a good show, which we did, right? Show off Faku, you know, and you know, hold our own against Arsenal, and then point to that in the off season when we're trying, or in this transfer window, and we're trying to sign some players. We're like, hey, look, we're a good, well-run organization. You might get a chance to play against Arsenal. Look how we held our own here. Faku Torres scored a banger against them that the whole world saw. Stuff like that. You have to use that as leverage to sign better players.
Yep. That's kind of similar to my answer to that one. All right. So let's kind of get to the Philly match itself. Let's just start with Facundo Torres's miss. Daniel, going to head back to you here. I know you referenced it already. But do you have any other thoughts other than just like that's a really, really poor miss from the Uruguayan?
Not really. I don't know. Like it makes you think that he didn't have the confidence to finish, and that wouldn't be a rare thing. I mean, that seems to be a common factor this year, but he was in a great position and the work was done for him. You know, it's just, he had to put it away and he just lacked the confidence. I don't know what it is, other than, and it's the only chance they created. So it looks even worse, you know? It's like the reverse Andy Cole, where everybody would get mad at him for having 10 chances a game and scoring one. And we have one guy, I guess, one chance in the game and doesn't score. So it's even worse. It was almost like a goalkeeper error when you miss your only chance. And it was a clear-cut chance. It wasn't like a half chance, you know?
No, that should have been a goal.
Yeah.
Hands down, should have
been
a goal. Or at least on target and a Blake save. That's acceptable. Not ideal, but acceptable. But you
realistically,
can't miss the target there.
Yeah, but Blake's not getting anywhere near it if he gets it on target. I mean,
yeah.
If he aims for the corner, which, you know, you would think he would do, then he's done. But he did aim for the corner. He was just either too cute, maybe, with trying to aim it right in the corner, which is a sign of a lack of confidence, believe it or not, because you're trying to be too precise and you're forgetting to just do the basic things. Or you're just bad. And I don't think Facundo Torres is a bad player. We know that. Like he said, he scored in midweek against Arsenal, and that was a bloody good goal. Against a world-class goalkeeper. Yeah.
The confidence thing is interesting that you referenced that, because I was just about to say, midweek, he should be high on confidence right now. He's had a couple goals. He just scored that goal against Arsenal. Mm-hmm. Like, he should be, like, high in the sky right now. So, I don't know if it's confidence. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're saying there are signs there.
And I think it's just my opinion from the way I perceived it. It's not... obviously not absolute, but I think that, you know, like in my experience, when people are underconfident, they try too hard. You know what I'm saying?
And yes.
By trying too hard, you end up missing altogether. You can apply that to almost any walk of life, pretty much. And I feel like you try to be just too precise. And it's like sometimes, I mean, you've got to just hit the target. You've just got to make sure you hit the target. And a lot of times your muscle memory and your instincts will just take over and finish the job for you, you know? It's when you overthink it is when you start causing problems for yourself.
And, yeah, that's a good point.
And I do feel from my, obviously, unprofessional and unfiltered opinion, that's kind of where I'm at with that particular one. And as for the goal in midweek, I mean, great goal. You know, shades of Rafinha, which I really liked. I thought he's a good player. You can see he's got that. But he's on a stage, it's on TV, it's a friendly, there's not that much pressure in the game, you know? And we saw a lot of people play quite well on Wednesday without the pressure.
So I will say, Arsenal, we did play our second stringers, and I will also say we played Pablo Marie and Rob Holding in a high line. And I don't care who's playing against them. There will be opportunities to run in behind.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that we tried to, though, that's a good sign. There was like a clear objective to play counter-attacking soccer. Mm-hmm. I just, why can't we do that in MLS sort of thing? Adam, did you have any thoughts on Facundo's miss, or can we move on?
I have not gotten a chance to review the Philly game.
Have you even seen the highlights?
No. Well, I saw the PK non-call video, and that's about it. But I do have some input. So, Gavin, you're going to hate this.
Oh, Lord.
According to Daniel, what Daniel's saying here is Gavin is so confident in our ability to make, like, a clean podcast because he doesn't try at all at editing.
Mm-hmm. That's what I'm saying. Yes.
I'm very, very confident. And it's just that's basically
what I took from this.
It's never actually what the outcome is. Okay, so let's go to the Philadelphia goal, Daniel, then. Flicked on header, Gosdog's there.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, I've been thinking about this a lot. Why don't players just tell each other, I'm going to kick the ball straight at the goalkeeper and you just run across him? I feel like it just would make it so much simpler. So, like, if Juan, because, like, that's basically what happened. He got flicked on straight to Galese. Gazdag's there, flicks it past him, goal. But think about this for a second. Juan sucks at crossing. And maybe I've already said this on this podcast before, but Juan is terrible at crossing. Why don't we just make crossing easy for him and say, Juan, kick it at the goalkeeper or just in front of him? And just every single time Juan gets to the byline, players know where he's going to kick it. So they're going to make that run. Because I think part of the issue with Juan is he never matches the runs that are made. And I don't know if that's an issue on the players making the runs or Juan just not knowing which runs are going to be made at the moments when he looks up. And he doesn't really look up all that much sometimes. So, like, why not just kick it at the goalkeeper? Have players run across the goalkeeper, and then once teams figure that out, like, change to the penalty spot or something. I don't know. That's my thought on how to fix Juan, because I don't know what else to tell him. Anyways, any thoughts on the goal?
Yeah, I mean, it was a contentious goal when you see it, you know, in real time, but I mean, the decision to allow it was correct. I mean, it's a set piece goal, which you don't really like to, to concede at all. And it was predictable. I had that name Gazdag in my head before they scored. I had a feeling he was probably going to score because, if I remember correctly, he scored a pretty good goal last season as well, didn't he?
I think so. I like him. He's a good player.
Like a 20, 25-yard shot, I think. Excuse me. So, I mean, on video review, I mean, it was given correctly. I think it was one that actually played the last man on side as well. So, I mean, they got it right. The VAR was used and used correctly in this instance, you know. And it came out of nowhere. It was Philadelphia's only shot on target during the entire match, which, you know, is just, you know, typical, really, you know.
When you're down bad, you are down bad. That's just the type of stuff that happens. You know, kind of like, let's see here. DC United having one win in their last 12 matches. In MLS, and it was away against us, 5-3.
And Atlanta's only win against a team in a playoff position in the last 25 years was against Orlando.
Last season, yep. So we're just the team that keeps on giving. Giving away these points for teams in bad runs. I mean, that's something we've done. I mean, like, historically, we lost to Chicago last year. We lost to Red Bulls two times when they were not a good team last season. Tied Cincinnati last year when we should have beat them. Tied under Miami. Yada, yada, yada. Okay, let's get to the penalty shout. So, Adam, I'll move it over to you. You did see the penalty. It's hard to sit here and ask, do you think it's a penalty? So I'm going to ask, do you think VAR has a... Do you think Pro has a point with Antonio Carlos's shirt pull? Did you see that explanation?
No, I slowed down the video. I tried to pause it at the moment, you know, all that shit. He does eventually get his hand, you know, on the the Philly player's shirt. I don't know that what he does constitutes a foul. Certainly not in comparison. I also don't know that his hand is on the Philly player's shirt before he's being grabbed. It almost seems like either a same time or a reaction to me. Obviously, I'm a little biased here, but like, come on, fam. Like, what are we doing here? What are we doing? I'm out of words for Pro at this point because what I feel to them is more apathy than anything because I know that in my heart of hearts, I know they are not out to get us. They are just bad at their jobs. I think we all know that. I think us pretending that Pro hates Orlando for some reason is, you know, a way of us coping with our team being disappointing. And because I do believe every team gets Pro probably just as much as we do. Just the teams that win are just better and have, you know, one or two goal leads at that time, and it doesn't affect them as much.
Also, and everyone listen to me, I do MLS Now podcast. I watch a bunch of MLS. Like, yes, every single team gets pro'd. It's not just us. Obviously, that's just like, no, that wouldn't make any sense. But also, people do tend to forget when we benefit from pro. It's very not often for us, I will
be
say.
Be careful here, Gavin. Be careful.
But we have recently benefited from a pro negligence, and that was against Houston Dynamo when they scored in the last second of the game. They did not call it back, and it looked to be a fair goal.
Shh, we don't talk about that in these parts.
And we would have tied 2-2. I'm just saying, like people forget stuff like that. I'm not saying you, Adam, because I agree with everything you're saying, but the populace in general, it goes both ways. Just recently, it has not seemed to. People forget.
My cat is literally trying to knock over my microphone right now.
This will not be edited.
Everyone say hi to Penelope. She's very helpful.
Sorry.
Wow.
Neither of those were actually the cat. I just have to let everyone know. It's ridiculous. But no, I think we need to create our own luck is the how we fix it. Like,
yes.
I'm tired of talking about pro. We know they suck. We know that refs miss calls. We know they're not going to input the processes or infrastructure or whatever to be able to make these calls more correctly, just because, I don't know, it doesn't make sense a lot of the time. And they call it one way on the field, and they don't want to admit they're wrong, and so they stick with that even though it's all obviously wrong. We know that's going to happen. You know, we know. Don't be down 1-0 to a team that had literally one chance the entire game. How about that? Right? How about that? I don't know.
So are you saying
I'm tired of talking to pro.
Suggesting, Adam, that Orlando actually have initiative and do something for themselves?
I don't think they're not trying.
It's not the players that are suggesting. It's everyone else's fault, is it?
No, that's the thing. You don't hear, and the players did. I did see some complaints from players on Twitter about this call, and rightfully so. It was a bad call. No one is saying it wasn't a bad call. Okay, because it was a bad call.
It was an awful call.
It's obviously a penalty. 10 times out of 10, I don't know why they called it. But you don't see the players talking about it 3 days later, right? You don't see Pareja harping on it 3 days later. They're trying to take initiative and do things and score goals and win games. They're not that good at it right now, you know? And that's, I think, more where the frustration comes from, is that when we put up a zero-goal performance, right? And then, you know, something could get us a goal, like, would be a, you know, off of a corner. Gets pulled down, get a penalty. So that would give us one goal to get a draw. We're like, bro, screwed us. No, we screwed ourselves. We screwed ourselves.
That's an excellent point.
Because we had to rely on that happening to get a chance at a goal.
It sounds like
that's the luck that we've been getting this season. I mean, not necessarily that specifically, but like, We will have one chance at getting a goal, and we either take it or we don't, and then that's kind of it for the game. And so, like, look at the Toronto win, right? Last second corner goal. Miami, last second cross own goal. Like, Houston even, like, there was a little bit of luck involved with the Cara deflection goal. Like, I don't know. And there are other instances as well. Charlotte, they left their whole entire, they were just stupid with the Juan assist to Faku. Like, at the end of the day, our wins are coming on what feels like flukes. Our draws are, you know, we're lucking our way to goals, and then we're giving up a goal, and then we're drawing the match. And then losses, we're not getting lucky. That's what it feels like. What were you going to say, Daniel?
I was going to say that the way Adam was describing all of that, the way he voiced all of the different actors in the particular scene, made it sound like a subplot from an Adam Sandler movie about a team that sucks.
Just very specific of you.
That's a compliment to you, Adam.
Coming soon, straight to DVD.
That's as far as I'll ever go.
Out of cafes near you.
Sniffing theaters.
So on a scale of 1 to 10, Adam, and again, you haven't seen the highlights. So Tesho missed a pretty decent chance at a header right at the end of the match. It wasn't like... Adam.
I'm sorry that was mean.
No, but like on a scale of 1 to 10, like how much do you think he will get blamed for us not winning this or for not drawing this match?
I've only seen like one Tesho sucks, I think, in the time since the match. So I guess not. I think people are more concentrated on the pro thing. The Tesho got lucky there.
Yeah.
Well, there was some noises that there was a lot of Tesho abuse coming out of a certain section of the stadium and also in a few other parts as well.
That's right.
I did see that.
You are correct. There were people saying Tesho was getting booed every time he touched the ball.
Mm-hmm.
Which is ridiculous.
I mean, don't do that, guys.
Yeah. We've already been over this enough. Like, there's not much left to say about it, but like, just whoever does that, they just don't watch. They don't understand the sport.
Yeah, and to go the chance
support your own players.
Yeah,
and I don't care if you don't like him. I didn't like Will Johnson, but did I boo Will Johnson every time that he touched the ball when he played for us? No, I shut the fuck up about it. Like, you don't have to be cheering for him every single time he touches the ball. But don't fucking boo him. And if you see someone do that, tell him to shut the fuck up. Because it's not cool.
Period. All right. Let's go ahead and get into Ivan Angulo, new signing, winger from Palmeiras. He was on loan at, I just had it up here, Portimonense. I think I said that correctly. Over in Portugal. I'm assuming neither of you have seen much on him.
No, I was pretty late into stuff today and I haven't seen much tape on him. I did see the few things that you and I discussed before the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, I'm not really too privy as to what he's about, really.
Adam? I know the baseline facts about him, like kind of his play style, and that's it. So as much as anyone else who hasn't really watched him knows.
Yeah. Well, do you want to outline those baseline facts real quick?
So he's both footed, which is kind of cool. He's young. He's like 22. He's fast. He's got some moves. He's a skillful dribbler. As far as like passing, creating, scoring goes, like nothing has really come off for him. I don't know if that's him getting unlucky, if that's a finishing issue, if it's a system issue, if it's a confidence issue, whatever. Whatever the reason, he hasn't been an assister or a scorer that much playing wing. So he's what I would describe as a talented project player. He's athletic, he's got skills, but he has not put it all together. And people expecting him to come in and being the answer to all of our prayers and our problems will probably be sorely disappointed. But he's a cool player for us to play around with and see if we can make him into something.
Yep. 12-month loan with an option to extend 6 months. What I did is kind of similar to what I did with Gaston Gonzalez is I basically just went on to... I typed into Google Portimonense, and I basically just went and opened the little widget that pops up. And they have little YouTube highlights there of the match. And so I just watched the highlights of the entire team in the matches that he played. And because that's, I feel like that's a, it's still highlights, but it's not highlights of the player. When you watch highlights of the player, they show only the good things and they're very cherry picked. And it's kind of hard to read a lot about a player. You can still learn a lot if there's a decently sized compilation out there. But I'd rather watch him because you can see him in defensive moments, offensive moments. You can see him mess up. You can see him do good things because a highlight is not necessarily a good thing. It's just maybe a good chance or a big moment in a match. So I haven't been able to do it for a ton of games, but I've done it for about five or six. And in those five or six games, I saw two things that regarded him. And he started and played the full 90 in all of those matches. Not coming off on the YouTube highlights for his team that he played for last season. And both of them were opportunities in the final third that the first one, he completely whiffed his shot. And the second one, he was through one-on-one with the goalkeeper, similar to Facundo Torres, and shanked it wide. So, Adam, going back to what you were saying, maybe it's a little bit of a ball striking issue and a finishing issue. In terms of not being able to do the end product. He looks quick. He looks comfortable on the ball from the highlights I've seen. But yeah, for me, I haven't seen a ton. I don't know everything about the player. I know next to nothing about him, really. Based on what I've seen, he gives me very Vanderwater replacement vibes versus he's coming in to start and save our season. So that's where I'm at with him. I guess we can go ahead and preview the massive, massive matchup coming up on Wednesday. So, Adam, I guess let's dive right in.
Yeah.
Lineup. Let's start with lineup. What would you do?
Full strength.
Yes.
What I would do. I would start Pato at left wing or right wing. It doesn't matter. I would start Pato at one of the wings, you know, Faku, Kara, go with our standard midfield three, Pereira, Urso, Araujo, Moutinho, Antonio Carlos, Robin Janssen, Juan, and Pedro Galese. Gotta go for it, I think. I hope the sticking points here for me are Juan and Pato. I think Juan will start. I don't think that messing with team chemistry is a huge, is a good thing to do necessarily. So I would throw Juan out there, and hopefully with Pato out there, Juan wouldn't be such a focal point of the offense, given that Pato, Faku, and Pereira are all ball carriers. So that's how I would go.
I will say Pato did start at nine, I'm pretty sure, in the 3-0 loss or the 3-1 loss or whatever. And I'm pretty sure he was next to invisible in that match.
Don't care. I would start him at...
on the wing, you said, to be fair. Wing,
yes. I mean, Pato's been per 90 our best creator the entire season. And it's not particularly close, and you know, I'm not sure why he's been relegated to the bench. What game was it, the last one he played, the LAFC game, where we gave up a bunch of goals and couldn't play defense? He's been a bench player ever since then, and I maybe it's in favor of defensive solidity or whatever, but we can't score goals, so we need our most talented goal scorers out there. Pato is one of them.
I lied. Pato started on the right wing and Caro started as striker in that match.
Okay. So I would go Pato, just give me some offense, and Juan, don't mess with the back line too much. And Kyle Smith hasn't been great the last few times we've seen him anyway, so I don't think he really... I was, you know, a month or two ago saying he might deserve a chance to start, but, you know, he started a few games and hasn't looked great, so... I don't think you mess with it too much.
Daniel, what are you feeling for lineup? Who should be playing in this match? And then we after this, we can kind of shift to how we should play.
I agree mostly with what Adam said. The only change I would make would be, I know this isn't going to happen, but I would try and match New York. I'd try and play a diamond similar to them and try and pack up the middle as much as you can, because we know that they go through the middle like all Red Bull teams do. You know, that's where they're going to try and get the ball. They're going to try and win it and tackle and be aggressive. So we need a diamond in there, I think, and you need to put your four. You know, you need Mauricio as the 10. And you'll need Urso, Pereira, and Araujo. I'm trying to pronounce that as a Yorkshireman's kind of difficult. But those would be my pick in midfield. I think you'd go, if Moutinho's fit at left back, one at right back, Janssen and Antonio Carlos. I mean, that picks itself. The only question I have is like who I would play as my two up front. And, you know, I know there's a few people calling for us to go direct and go long. I really hope we don't. I just hate that. I think it's anti-football. And it's you're relying too much on percentages rather than actually creating decent chances to score. So I think Pato has to start. He's a big game player. He's the most celebrated player on the roster right now with experience, and it's a semi-final in the Cup. So he needs to play. I don't care what he did in the last game. You need to give him a go. And if he's going to show his worth, now's the time for him to do it. The only question I have is who do you play up there with him? Because I'm not sure this is Cara's type of game. You know, with all the mobility of the New York team and the pressing, you know, it wouldn't be a bad shout for me to put Facundo up there with Pato and just let it go, you know?
I like the idea of matching them. Mm-hmm. I do. We can't do what we did last time. We tried to play deep. Like we have to set up in a way to put them under some pressure.
You match up and go hell for leather, you know? That's what you need to do. Yeah.
So are we talking tactics now?
Just one second. Let me just say this.
Yeah.
It will not happen, but Tesho pressing his ass off for 60 minutes would be kind of helpful in this match to just put them under pressure, to not give them a second on the ball, and to help us because we couldn't get out. We couldn't get out for nearly the whole match against them last time. We had like two shots, something like that. I mean, it was an ugly, ugly game. For us, we can't have that happen again. And part of that was Carr up top. Like, I get what y'all are saying about Pato. I get it. And I agree he should start just because he can have that moment of quality. But the guy's first touch has been pretty woeful this season. And New York Red Bulls pressured him and he wasn't able to keep the ball for us. And that was just kind of part of the team's issue. Is he got swarmed. Carl wasn't doing anything. Pereira got swarmed. Faku was kind of meh that day. Juan kept giving the ball away in our defensive third. Like, we couldn't keep the ball. Plain and simple. We have to set up a system where we are able to keep the ball in our half and we are able to keep the ball in their half. And I think, Daniel, what you're saying with matching them up helps that. I think either Benji or Tesho up top pressing helps that as well.
Yeah.
We can talk tactics now.
So Benji or Tesho up top only works if you're going to play long ball, because they're not going to help you, you know, pass the ball around, which is exactly not what Daniel wants to see.
Once, but if it's going to win us this game, I want to see it.
I'm conflicted. I think that probably, if you're going to go strictly, what gives us the best mathematical chance to win, that might be it. And I hate to say that, but like if your gut feeling right, put your talent on the pitch. What I think would do, because what a Red Bulls want to do, they want to press your midfield They want to stay central. They want to stay narrow. They want to create turnovers in midfield and then sprint towards your goal. How do you avoid that? You could try by playing wide, which is why a little bit why I would want to start Pato on the wing. It gives you an extra ball carrier there, and you can that he can start try to start creative plays maybe from the wide flank rather than trying always to go central with Mauricio. We can progress the ball up, and Juan is good at progressing the ball. He's good at progressing it, not necessarily, you know, the final end product, but you can use him to progress the ball wide in a relatively safer zone than trying to play it through the midfield. João Moutinho, same thing on the other side. He's a good ball carrier. He can progress it up the left flank. You can use Faku in that manner because Faku can do literally anything. So we go just straight wide in the buildup, and Mauricio and Urso can also play wide, and you just have Araujo stay home and play cleanup. Don't use him for buildup literally at all.
So Adam, go ahead, finish.
So you go wide in the buildup. Then when you get to the final third, then you can unlock the center of the field again, try and pass it in, pass it around the box like we do, because I don't know that we have any other ideas. But yeah, I would not try to play through the middle against Red Bulls, because I think us trying to match them just plays into their hand because they're better at it than us.
So I'm going to say this, the Red Bulls match, I actually rewatched. I think I rewatched it by myself. It's up on the website if y'all want to check it out. I think it's just called New York Red Bulls match rewatch. New York Red Bulls did do a good job of clogging up the middle, but what they also did a good job of was using the touchline as a defender, and they pressed our fullbacks, especially Juan. I agree, Juan's pretty decent at progressing the ball up the field and finding those passes. I don't think he's bad at it at all. He really, really struggled under pressure against New York Red Bulls. And I mean, he, again, similar to the entire team, but he also was a big, big reason why we could not get out. Because every time the ball went to him, Luquinhas pressed him and forced him out to the sideline, and then either won the ball or he gave it away while trying to force a pass because he was under pressure. And so, like, I get what you're saying. I think it makes sense logically, but they're going to press our fullbacks, and we weren't able to cope with that last time because they also had people pressing in midfield. And, like, this idea that we can do anything in our half other than hoof it long and try and win second balls, I think that's the way we have to go. And it's ugly, it's disgusting, it's gross. We hate it, Daniel, going over to you now. But, like, this is a match we need to win. Plain and simple, it's win or go home. We're in the semifinals. We will be the favorites in the final, no matter how bad we're playing. SKC are playing worse, and or it's a USL club. And it's a chance at a trophy in CCL. So where are you at with style of play for this match? Because for me, don't try anything in our half. Get the ball up the pitch. Press them. Try and score off corners. Score quickly. Be able to sit in. Like, ugly football for me.
Just try and pass the bloody ball to feet. That's all I want.
We can't. We can't. No, we can't. We've tried it three times against this team in the past two seasons, and we can't against them.
You can try and do it in the final third a bit more, at least. I mean, I get like you can't keep playing out of the back. I understand that. That's fair enough. But once they get the ball up there, stop giving the ball to bloody Juan to cross it to nobody.
Yes.
Stop giving it to him. Tell him, look, get the ball, get wide, open up the space, then pass it to somebody. And hopefully have somebody run up to support them. And that's on the coach, so he needs to send someone up to be in space to do that. Which is why I'm in favour of the diamond, because that's going to give you those triangular options to pass to when you get the ball. And having two guys up there, Pato and Torres, if I could pick, that's who I would pick, will have enough off-the-ball movement to give you those options. And also, I feel enough control to receive the ball and to be able to do something with it. Because if you get the ball around the box against New York, yeah, they can try and press you, but you're also committing them to doing something. We can find space. recycle the ball a little bit and try and build up around there. I know they're not going to pass it out the back. I mean, I hurt it. I actually close my eyes when Orlando tries to pass out the back from the goalkeeper because they just can't do it. But there's no reason why we can't get the ball up to the final third and then try and at least play some football. You know what I'm saying?
Well, how do you want to get the ball to the final third is my question.
Well, we don't pass it to the centre backs. I get that. You know, because they're going to press, but we try and get it wide, maybe to the fullbacks or to the wider midfielders of the four, and then you try and build up from there. It's a shame that we don't have a decent deep line playmaker either. You know, we could play in as a six to get the ball, but that's what I would try and do. I mean, I just wouldn't be hoofing it long up and over. I just don't think
we have Perea. He's kind of decent at, you know, being available and roaming and being an option and passing.
I could be an option.
He just can't play defense.
I could play there.
You want to pin our hopes at getting
him to open up title. I was playing devil's advocate.
On Andres fucking Perea.
Listen, with all respect to Andres, you know, like, he can't do anything when he gets it. He'll get it and then he'll look and he'll probably pass it back.
If you want to play that game, Araujo is the best one for the job. He can do it. He just hasn't done it here. But if you look at his Uruguay tape, he did it then. If you want him to be that deep lying, maybe not necessarily playmaker, but a guy who can progress the ball and beat the press, him combining with Pereira and Urso. If you just want to completely change how we play, completely, right? The way that you can also beat Red Bulls is by putting on a possession masterclass and by passing around their press, tiring them out, and then, you know, walking the ball into the goal. But we haven't done that all season, so I don't see why it's worth trying that now.
Austin's probably one of the best teams at that in the league. And they struggled heavily against the Red Bulls
exactly. The
other night.
You have to be perfect. And you have to beat them probably twice in the first half. You have to score two goals in the first half and make them change it up and say, oh, we're getting our ass kicked. We have to change something else. Because the way to beat Red Bulls is to make them give up their press. Because they can do it for a full 90 because, I don't know, they have super soldier serum or something. I don't see that happening. I think we're all kind of looking for the same thing: is get the ball to the final third safely, and then try and make something happen more creatively. I do think we need a lot more movement off the ball to give our ball handlers some.
That's some exactly where I was going, Adam.
That's what I said as well with the forwards that I would pick. That's the reason why.
I agree. I think Kara can do that. Kara is good at getting in the right place. He's just not good at doing it at the right time for everyone else, I think. If that makes any sense. He knows where to be to score the ball. He just needs to work on his timing and being a little more active getting there.
So I like where you were going with that, Adam, because my thought process is the players who we have up there have to show and not be invisible. They have to show, they have to, you know, be an option, they have to be close. And that's why I think you're going match them up, go diamond in the midfield. And what they do a really good job of is they switch. They're very fluid. They go from a three back to and like deep build up, and then once they get into the attack, they shift to a two back, and Frankie Amaya does a lot of that shifting and going back and forth, and Casares jumps back in defense as well. And I mean, they're a tactically defined team. So they're obviously just giving a lot of teams headaches this season, but the players, there is a way to beat them. They're not unbeatable. And we have to play well. The players have to be on their game. The players in attack have to move. that's why I wouldn't start Carr this game, because there's no mobility, and that would be the easiest game for their defense. That would be the easiest game for their defense. Carr and Pato. Because all you have to do is really press Pato hard. He won't have a good first touch. He'll give it away. And then Carr, no mobility, won't show for the ball, won't really press for headers either. And that's exactly what happened in the game against them. And we lost 3-0, and we had three shots. Score? Who's going to score? Player can score if we put them
Carr's been the only one that has. He's the only one of the players that has scored with anything even remotely approaching regularity.
There's no way I'm starting Carr in this match. There's no way he should start this match. And maybe that's going to come back to bite me when he scores a hat trick and freaking wins us the cup. I don't know.
And I hope so.
I know, right?
We win the cup and I get to go to gloat over you. Like that would be a great day.
Yeah, no way I start Carr in this match. It would be another... it would be another Atlanta match where he doesn't do anything. Gets taken off at 55 minutes for Tesho. Okay. Predictions, Daniel. We talked about what we would do. What do you think will be the outcome and what we will do?
I think we're going to piss around with the ball in the penalty in our own half and try and hoof it long. I think New York will get it back. From end forward, put Orlando under pressure, and I think New York will win 2-1 in regular time.
Adam?
That's a bold prediction, thinking this game will end in regular time. You know, I want to believe. I want to believe so hard. Because for several reasons. One, we've gotten our ass kicked so many times in a row against New York. You got to eventually figure it out, right? Poppy's eventually got to figure it out. You would think, you would hope. We lost in, you know, kind of Orlando-ish fashion on this weekend. And Red Bulls won. So, you know, of course we would beat them. I don't know. I think somehow, some way, in my gut, feeling it's going to be a 1-1 draw that comes down to penalties somehow, some way. That's just what I feel. and you know who goes through on penalties.
I think this match goes to penalties as well. I mean, I would have to see the starting lineup, I think. But yeah, I'm going to say penalties and we somehow figure it out. And went on penalties yet again. One last thing here, and I think this is a fair point to bring up. Y'all can tell me if you feel like I'm completely wrong, which you will. There are some rumors floating around that Pareja's job might be on the line for this match, and that. Players will, I mean, I would assume if players hear that, they're going to be fighting for the coach. They're not just going to throw the towel in, especially in a semifinal. We can tell the players are still fighting for the coach. So how do you think that factors in here, if at all, the players being a little bit more up for it to make sure they don't let their coach down? Daniel, sorry.
You know, you made a point on Twitter today that I responded to. You mentioned that no job should ever come down to one match, right?
Can I explain that real quick?
Yeah, well, my response to that was that eventually every coach's job does come down to one. You know, there's always going to be a point where the scales are going to tip and a decision will be made. Whether this is the right time for it, I mean, that's a debate in itself, one that we already covered pretty extensively. I think really what they're going to look for on Wednesday, assuming the rumor's true, let's just say hypothetically that they're looking, if the result doesn't get, you know, Oscar out of the job, then the approach to the game might. And if you're going to lose, you've got to lose, you know, with the players. You've got to try and win the game. You've got to be protagonists. Is that word that famously gets thrown around? that's what they have to do. That's what the coach has to do. Results home form this season have been, you know, have not just not been good enough, you know. And it's not just the result; it's the way that they've gone about it. So, I don't think it's really fair that it's fair that it should hang on a cup final and a semi final. But then, you know, taking the whole season into picture, is it the wrong decision? I don't know.
So when I say it shouldn't come down to one match, I just kind of mean like it shouldn't come down to if he wins, we keep him, and mm-hmm. if he loses, we get rid of him. Because if he wins, I still don't think we should keep him. Like, I would be fine at the end of the season if he wins the whole thing saying thank you, Pareja. Unless we figured out and Open Cup run was just a really struggling, and I don't know, like something magical happens, like what happened in Minnesota. By the way, Adrian Heath in Minnesota, they were struggling big time this season. He got a new contract. They were still struggling after that. They've turned it around. They've gone on a tear recently. It is not impossible. It is not impossible. It can happen. But from what we have all seen over the past three seasons, this is Pareja. This is who he is. And like, if we get through to the Open Cup final and win it, I don't see a sustainable way of playing. And winning that match does not change my outcome of I'm okay if Pareja is fired.
Fair enough. I get that point. You know, it's just, there's never really a fair time, I guess, in the eyes of some. You know, it's always a two-way debate that some will agree, some won't, and it's never going to be a fair time to fire a coach.
Yeah.
Realistically speaking, but, you know, I get your point. I tend to agree with you.
Adam, any thoughts on the players being potentially extra up for the match?
I hope they're not
extra up already.
That's the thing. Like it's a cup semi. Like this is, and if like we've said this several times about Open Cup matches over the years, the biggest match in Orlando City history, maybe barring the MLS's back final, because that would have been a CCL berth. This is, you know, I don't want to write off the cup final because that's dumb. It's still a professional team on the other side, but the winner of this match should win the cup final. This is big, right?
This is the cup final.
This is for, I don't want to say that because, again, it's a professional team on the other side. You never know. And just like Red Bulls should be heavy favorites against us, but we're sitting here trying to think of the ways we can win, right? It's the same shit. And it's a chance at a major trophy. It's a chance at CCL. You know, it's our first one. You don't want to think that the extra motivation is, oh, hey, if y'all lose, y'all are going to get your coach fired. You don't want to think that they need that, you know, that they're going to be extra up for. Like, it should be enough. This is what you grow up dreaming of if you're an athlete. You dream of playing in these types of games where you're if you win, you're a game away from a trophy. That should be all you need. And I personally don't love speculating on someone's job when there's a chance that they could hear it, because here's the thing. If we can know inside info from time to time, that means what we say can make it back to the players and the coaching staff, because MLS is not like other professional leagues in the United States or around the world. It's not as big as those other leagues. It's more, the organization is much more communicative with and in touch with the community in all of its facets, good and bad. And so if a bunch of people are speculating on does he need to win or not, I don't know. I don't feel that it helps. Whatever will happen will happen. We don't truly know in any event. I hope they do well. I hope they're up for it. I hope that they play their asses off. Mm-hmm. And you know what? If they do that and they lose, whatever happens, happens.
Yeah, so, That's kind of where I was headed.
One thing I will say is the team has not given up on Oscar Pereja.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see that very, very clearly, because we know what a team giving up looks like. It's happened on numerous coaches throughout. I think it's happened to every single coach previous to Oscar Pereja. So if he can say it is the end for him, say we lose and that's the end, right? At least he can say that they never gave up, that he never gave up, that the team never gave up on him, and that they tried their best to the very end. Because I don't believe that they're not trying their best. I believe that they have some shortcomings, they being the players and the coaching staff. And that's what we analyze and we criticize and we acknowledge, right? We have never come on this podcast and said that it was a lack of effort. I don't think any one of us have ever said that. Maybe lack of initiative and creativity, maybe, you know, a little constrained in what they do from time to time, but I don't think it's ever been a lack of effort. And you know what? At the end of the day, we're not better coaches than Oscar Pereja. We don't know soccer better. We might think we have some ideas. You put us in that position, we're going to fail spectacularly. All we can ask is that the people that are paid to do the thing we want them to do, try their best to do it. And they do. So, you know, whatever happens, happens.
Daniel, did you want to say something to that?
Yeah, it was. I largely agree with Adam. Like, I think I just go back to my earlier point. I think if anyone's watching, it's more to do with how the game's approached. You know, you've got to try to win. You've got to try and be positive in what you do. I'm not a fan of like speculation, full stop. And you know, and I've said it, even though I think a change, you know, might be a foot at some point, you know, out of respect to the coach. I think if you give him the year to finish and it's a semi-final and a, you know, and a playoff place at the end, I mean, that's a good, respectable finish. And then you assess, you know, what you have to do to get to the next step, you know. I agree with Adam that I've never once criticised this group of players for lack of effort. I don't feel like they've never not tried it. I think, yeah, they can frustrate the hell out of you, but I think every team has the capability to frustrate supporters. It just seems to be, you know, more of an issue in Orlando is that the players just don't have the same wavelength, you know, and the same level of talent at times, but you can't say they never try. I mean, they do. They leave everything out there. I think they do genuinely do as much as they can. And for that, they deserve to be supported. You know, I think that's going back to your point on Tesha. You don't boo your players. The only time you'd even boo a player is if they have an obvious attitude problem and they show it. Then yeah, maybe you can understand that. But yeah, I agree with what Adam said. He put it extremely well.
Yep, per usual from Adam. Let's get into listener questions and let's get out of here. So let's start with a similar thing. Coming from similar topic, at Aguay Goat, Adam, he says, is Pereja's job on the line on Wednesday? So I guess this is really, do you think the rumors are real?
Again, don't like doing the speculation thing. I don't think it's helpful. We just kind of covered that. So if you listen to the last 5 minutes or so, there's your answer.
Yeah. All right. So next up, and to be fair, NJ Tommy, that's the username. He said, it's not me saying it is. It's just purely a question. This was a funny one. At Moraima_4 gave the shrugs. Adam, you said you wanted to answer the shrugs.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So what do we think Moraima wants to know? Well, I said we would get to the bottom of it. So what do we think Moraima wants to know?
Ryan was pretty smart when it comes to the sport in Orlando City. She wants
to know what's for dinner tomorrow. That's what it is.
I mean, or not tomorrow, but on
what's for dinner on Wednesday?
Wednesday, it's Cappy's, obviously. We got purple bread. That was the thing. We're getting every sub's gonna be on a purple bread loaf, so that's gonna be kind of cool. But I don't. Let's see. What does Moraima want to know? She wants to know who scores the goal. Because we're getting one goal. I think we all agree we're getting one goal.
One goal.
Who's going to score? I think Faku. I'm going to Faku. Faku goal.
Pato.
Pato?
Pato.
I would like to see Pato because that means we're playing Pato.
The ball will come to the outside of the area and it'll on a special up and up and he'll just take a pot shot and it'll go in.
Oh, a banger. Ooh, for Pato. That would be sexy. Beautiful.
Yeah,
we're not creating anything. So Antonio Carlos off a corner.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, give it to me. Give me that big boy defender header. Bounces around in the box.
Yeah.
He chests it in.
Thanks for the question, Marima. at L Douglas 0107, Daniel. Who do you think played their lineup better going into Wednesday's game? Looked like Red Bulls rested starters where we looked to play most of our starters. So I'll just go through the two lineups. So we started Galese, Juan, Schlegel, Jansen, Moutinho. So out of the back five, I'd say we rested Carlos.
Mm-hmm.
Front six, or whatever it is, six. Facundo Torres, Perea, Araujo, Moreni, Pereira, and Cara. I would say we rested Urso. So we rested two players, right? Right mm-hmm. center back and left center mid, usually. Or, sorry, right center mid. New York Red Bulls, I have them up here for a second, so let me go over there. Here it is. In their away match against Austin, they started Carlos Coronel, their starting goalkeeper, Tom Edwards, Sean Nealis, Aaron Long, John Tolkien, starting back line for them. They started Drew Yearwood and Daniel Edelman. Both are rotation players. Drew Yearwood actually hasn't played in quite a while for them, and I think scored a goal in this match. And then they started Caden Clark, also has been a rotation option. Omir Fernandez, he has started some games. Not started others. Serge Ngoma, 17-year-old right winger, not a locked-in starter by any stretch of the imagination. And Klimala, he's their like starting striker, but him and Lewis Morgan kind of go back and forth sometimes. They rotated a lot heavier than we did. So, not saying they did better, just because you rotate more doesn't necessarily mean you handled it better. So Daniel, do you just want to kind of give your thoughts on the two rotations?
In this case, New York certainly did it. I mean, I think they had a tougher game on paper, mm-hmm. you know, factoring travel time as well, which they had to take care of. And some of those players, I mean, you're telling me Caden Clark and Klimala are rotational options. I mean, they would slot into a lot of MLS teams right now from the start. So
Klimala starts a decent amount, but like Caden Clark definitely does not start all their matches.
No, he doesn't. And with all the hype that was around him, you know, and the way he was progressing, you'd think that he would. You'd think he'd be a lock for like 80 or 90% of the games. So he's not. And I don't know, they've just got very good depth, especially in that final third. I mean, those attacking midfield and forward positions, you know, they've just got so much to choose from. I mean, in this case, I'd say they did rotate their squad.
Yesterday was Caden Clark's first start of the season.
It's not a bad player to have at this point of the season, making the first, you know?
Yes.
Yeah. That's testament to the depth they've got. And, you know, I mean, the Red Bull system, it's got to be a difficult one, really, to get players into. I think you've got to be fit for a start, and then you've got to be mentally tuned in to when to press and how to play quickly in transition. I mean, that's probably one of the struggles he's had, is just getting into that and being able to adapt. So I don't know. I think I'd say New York probably is the better one in this case. They've definitely used their players better, and they're going to come full strength on Wednesday, and it's going to be a battle, isn't it?
Yeah, it is going to be a battle. I have to agree. I think with all the games we've played, it would have been nice to rest a few more starters. But also, like, I don't know, starting against Philly keeps the players, you know, match sharp. We are at home. So, like, again, I'm not too worried about the fitness, as I said earlier in the podcast. We've been home for like the last week straight. So travel hasn't been a problem where it has been for them. But definitely, maybe could have, you know, rotated or even, what was the word? Rotated substitutes. We could have substituted a little bit earlier because I'm trying to find the match here. But if I recall correctly, we waited quite a while before we did our first sub, right? Let's see here. We sub 61. So we did a halftime sub for Mulroney. We did 61st minute for Perea. Then we did 75th minute for Pereira and for Juan, and then 81st minute for João Moutinho and 89th minute for Cara. So, yeah, maybe could have been, you know, 10 minutes earlier, but whatever. Finishing up here, we got a couple more. At OC Lions fan one, Adam, please discuss new signings. I think the bulk of the blame should be on our attacking players, not the coach. Interesting. Some questionable tactics for sure, but zero goals out of two strikers getting minutes is bad.
I mean, hard to disagree because there's no denying that any of our players are talented players. Like, here's the thing, is anyone really going to sit there and tell me that you give a coach, Fager Torres, Mauricio Pereira, Ercan Cara, Alexander Pato, right? That's your top four attackers. And you give them that team and you tell them that most coaches aren't going to figure out a way to get those guys to score. I disagree with that notion that it's not the tactics, because it is. We are sorely lacking in direct runs towards goal, in off-ball movement, in meaningful passes in the final third instead of just like knocking around, like incisive passes to hit those direct runners that should be there. All those things would maybe not fix every single issue we have, but would score more than like half a goal a game, especially in the run of play, rather than relying on some bounce somewhere off a set piece, throw in, whatever. Discussing the new signings, we discussed Angulo a little bit. We talked about him. He's a project. He's raw, but he's talented. Jay Keeney's got a little more polish to him. Not too much more, just a little more. Got eight caps.
Do you think he's a striker now,
Jay Keeney?
Since we've brought in
Evan, didn't Evan Weston say he was a striker?
Well, I mean,
or was it Gabby Amado that said he was a striker?
Someone, like, were they saying he's like a striker, or like
someone in the Orlando City media team said he was like striker, like number nine, you know, okay, number nine, but like, you know, that position, which I question the logic of, given that we have three playable ones and also Jack Litt. If we're,
well, he's mobile, definitely, but he can do the all three positions, but no, it is going to be interesting to see like where to use him.
How the coaching staff sees him.
Yeah,
I question the wisdom of bringing Jay Keeney in right now if we're going to play him at striker, because he's either A, not going to see the field, and you know, and then why? What's the point? Or B, he's displacing Ercan Cara, which you just spent a ton of money on in roster space and whatnot on Ercan Cara, and you kind of have to make him work. There's no option to not make Ercan Cara work. I'm sorry. Like, I see the logic of maybe taking him out against Red Bulls because strategy, but overall you have to make Ercan Cara work. His spot has to, I'm sorry, he's a DP striker. Are we going to be like Miami with the DP striker sitting on the bench and then suck because we can't score goals? No, we're not going to do that. We have major Ercan Cara work. So to me, at least this year, Jay Keeney has to be a winger, because that winger has been where the problem spot is, and Jay Keeney has at least shown a little bit of end product to him, versus Angulo has shown virtually none. So I would look at Jay Keeney to be the one that comes in, and he also arrived a few days earlier, that comes in to make more of a this season impact, hopefully at the winger spot opposite Faku, because for whatever reason, we don't seem to like playing Pato there. And hopefully Giacchini, with his athleticism and mobility, because he's also a very good athlete, can track back a bit more on defense and also provide the direct runs that we need on offense and provide a little more of that flair and finishing ability that some of our other wingers lack.
Now, I will say, what was the question? You named four players, right? You named Cara, Bato, Pereira, and Faku as our top four. And then you said we need runs in behind. Faku is the only player of those four that would provide that.
Pato can do it. He just hasn't been asked to.
Yeah, that's true. It was just same with Faku. He hasn't been asked to either. But
yeah, that's what I'm saying. But Faku and Pato can, and there you go. You have your runs in behind off the right and left side channels that Pereira can find, and then Cara can find that soft space and be hit by those two players who have gotten in behind and gotten the ball, and then you get end-lined and you have an easy cut back to Cara, who's then found that little pocket of space that's his strength, is finding that half yard to be able to get a shot off. And both Pato and Faku are have extremely good vision and can find people in that split second, you know, through that traffic. Both of them can do that.
Yeah. Daniel at M Scott Hubbard says, I think teams have figured out Juan and he hasn't been able to adjust. Yes. Do we give Mikey a shot and deal with the learning curve? So let's just take the Open Cup out of this, because I don't necessarily think he's talking about Open Cup semifinal, but just in general. And if he is, I would say no to Mikey for the semifinal. Do we give Mikey a shot maybe in the match after the semifinal over Juan and just deal with the learning curve?
Yeah, in league play, definitely.
Absolutely, yep.
I don't think you start pissing around with it now with the Open Cup game. I mean, you could totally destroy a young player's confidence if you put him in and he has a real bad game, you know? I think he actually played against Red Bulls last year, if I remember right, and might have been his first game, but I think he didn't play too well, you know? And we didn't see him much after that. You know, you got to be very careful with younger players, but no, I mean, after Wednesday, yeah, I mean, absolutely, give him a run in the team, and while we're doing that, let's give Jack Lynn a few games as well, because it's about time that you start seeing how some of these players do. In the case of Lynn, I mean, they're trading some assets to get him in the draft. Same with the other player last year. Was it Dodson or Dodson? Is that his name? Derek Dodson,
yeah.
I mean, they traded up in the draft to get him and then never used him, which was just baffling, you know? It's just like, you know, you've got to start giving some of these players an opportunity, like, you know, if they've shown something, which, you know, Halliday has shown some potential and Lynn is scoring goals and OCB, I mean, yeah, absolutely. Give him a go. Deal with the learning curve, as the user said, and, you know, and start looking forward. Absolutely.
Yep. Last question here at MTBH12. More players going in or coming out? Honestly, no idea. No idea if we're going to be more active still. I think Mendez was the obvious one. Like I think I said a couple episodes prior to him leaving, I was like, yeah, Mendez is probably going to go this summer. Like, he's not playing at all. He's an asset. Like, it just makes sense. I don't know of another player who fits that other than, like, a loan for Tablante. Obviously, Rivera went out on loan today to Indy 11. Best of luck to him. I don't even know who else would go out. Maybe like a, I don't know. We just signed another winger. Would we lose a forward? Could there be a shock loss in the forward area? A Benji or we just signed Jake, so not Jake. So what would the other one be? Pato?
Maybe Pato. There was rumors, wasn't there, a few weeks ago that he was on his way out. Don't you remember? There was a rumor of a bid from somewhere.
Yeah, I remember that. But I think that was proven false.
I have no idea. I just, it's obviously a rumor, and he's not been playing that much. So you put those things together, then that's a possibility. Tesha might even find himself a move. He's not getting any minutes.
That's another one, yeah. I wouldn't say there's no way we're not bringing in any more players or there isn't more work that could be done. It's just, I literally, no clue what we would do. Okay, so that's where we will end it. Big game on Wednesday. Are either of you going?
It's very unlikely I can go. I've got my commitments here at home. It's a bit tricky. Yeah. I'm going to be watching for sure, but I just won't be. Right. I probably won't be at the game.
Adam, I know you'll be there. I don't even know why I asked you. I'm still not sure if I'll be able to go or not. I'm still on the fence as we just got a new dog. And we haven't really left her alone for an extended period of time, and I would have to do that. And she is bonkers, off the wall crazy. So I might risk it because, you know, semifinal, want to be there.
For the biscuit. But,
might risk it for the biscuit. Yeah, might have a hole in my drywall, though. Not sure. All right, well.
That'll be worth it.
Well, yeah, maybe. Just for us to lose the final to freaking San Diego or Sacramento. By the way, that'd be the most Orlando City thing ever, to make the final and lose to Sacramento. Just saying. Adam, where can our listeners find you at?
Crying in the pub when we go to penalties against Sacramento, and that's the first time that we lose on penalties as a club in our history.
That would be very Orlando City. Daniel, where can our listeners find you at?
We're lying on a couch in a therapist's office after remembering and recalling this season. And
yeah. It's been a shit show, for sure.
It has. Real talk, come see me in the Cappy's truck. Broken strings. We're going to start around 4, 4:30-ish on Wednesday, and we're going to be doing everything purple. It's going to be a good time. It's going to be very Instagrammable. And maybe I'll even get off my ass and take some pictures. So, yeah. And it, for those of you that have come to see me, it's been great to meet all of you and see your smiling faces.
Sounds good. Sounds good. Thanks, guys. Have a good rest of your night. And as always, vamos, Orlando.
Vamos.
Good night.
The biggest man in MLS comes up huge!